Hold my beer while I do this. It's the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. One Medicare podcast that never fails to satisfy. He was elected to his squad to take the point. It's Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Thank you very much, Drew McMillan, for introducing me, Doug Jones, your Medicare expert. This is the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast, and we are coming at you from warm, sunny Arizona, where it's probably going to be 110 degrees today. And that's just inside. Imagine what it's like outside. Or do I have that backwards? Now, here is the point at which I usually irritate my sister Susan by defining the lazy man that we're podcasting to, but I'm not going to do that today. I'm going to ask Randy to play our 30-second radio spot that's in hot rotation around here. Randy, have at it, if you would.
Medicare is complicated. Medicare can be confusing. Medicare is no fun to study. Will you know what decisions to make when Medicare time arrives for you? My name is Doug Jones, and I wrote a book to help you figure it all out. Medicare for the Lazy Man 2020. It's on sale at Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Also, you can download and listen to my podcast, Medicare for the Lazy Man, wherever fine podcasts are given away free of charge. Medicare for the Lazy Man, simplest and easiest guide ever.
Okay, thank you. It's always a pleasure to hear that. Drew McMillan, the announcer, is my nephew, and he is also available to be seen in action on Powerboat TV, a Canadian show about all things powerboats. No sailboats allowed on that show. And if you want to see episodes of the Drew McMillan era of hosting, then you can go to powerboattv.com. and watch any of the 2020 episodes. My nephew Drew is one of the hosts. So we have a Medicare subject that's surprisingly interesting. And before I do that, though, I should introduce Randy Carson, a broadcast engineer and social distancer par excellence. Hello, Randy.
Doug, are you doing well today, I hope?
Oh, sure. I'm doing great, considering the fact that I've got to pack up and leave for Illinois tomorrow. I'm not real happy about that. What I was going to say about the subject today, though, is it's surprisingly alliterative. I'm surprised that between you and I, we came up with something this alliterative. You actually had it, though. Mailbag Marathon.
That's it. We are doing our first, I think it's our first, Mailbag Marathon.
It's
you can watch it this
first,
weekend.
Ladies and gentlemen, but he doesn't know that, so we'll just let him go with that thought. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, you were saying, darn. What was it you were saying there, Doug?
Well, I don't think it's our first, but, you know, it might be.
No, I don't think so. But I think it may be the first that we're going to, you know, play over the weekend on one of these commercial radio stations.
Ah, okay. Well, yeah. Very good.
And it's actually broadcast out of my garage. It's a really well-known radio station.
Can you dance to it?
I can dance to it, and it's got a nice beat. It's actually, who was it that used to say that?
Dick Clark.
Dick Clark.
Any guests?
Everybody on Dick Clark's show. It's got a nice beat, and I can dance to it.
Yeah, well, I'll give it a 7 then or something.
Did anybody ever get a 10?
I don't think so. I think they were told don't ever give them the top score because it'll go to their heads.
Yeah, yeah. But, I used to watch Dick Clark religiously. I have no idea why.
It used to irritate me from the youngest age that I was aware of Dick Clark. It used to irritate the heck out of me that he believed in lip syncing so much. And I hated watching a band that I liked pretend to play and sing a song that I liked, knowing that it was lip-synced. And as a young person, I was irritated by it, and I just got more and more irritated as Dick and I grew older. There were other music shows that were not so bad in that regard, but we had a lot of local ones in Chicago. There was Jim Lounsbury's Dance Party and stuff like that, but I tell you, Dick Clark knew that lip syncing was inexpensive and that most kids probably wouldn't object to it, but that just irritated the heck out of me. Now, we've got a couple of hanging chads that we didn't deal with. The two that I see that are most critical probably to address are yours, ASMR, and my running out of gas story.
Well, what do you say we do the a quick touch on the ASMR, because I think someday we might want to go here with our podcast.
I want to hear all about it.
ASMR is a new field of study, and it stands for Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response.
Slow down. Let's run that by me again. Because I got A-U.
Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response.
All right. Could you, Mr. Smarty Pants, could you explain that a little bit, please?
It doesn't happen to everyone, but some people have an automatic response. Obviously, it's called autonomous, so they have nothing that they do to cause it or control it. But it is a tingling sensation that typically begins on the scalp and moves down the back to the neck to the upper spine. A pleasant feeling, it has been compared with audio-tactile synesthesia.
You're not reading any of this, are you?
No, though I know this by heart. And ASMR signifies the subjective experience of a low-grade euphoria characterized by a combination of positive feelings and a distinct static-like tingling sensation on the skin. It is most commonly triggered by specific auditory or visual stimuli and less commonly by intentional intention control.
You have just opened up a whole related can of worms for me.
I know. I mean, we can actually, if you really want to go there, I think we could put our podcast in combination with ASMR. And people, it's, the only thing I can describe it, I don't know whether it's like this or not, but you know how when you get like a chill down your spine?
Yes, I know exactly what that's like.
So they say that certain sounds, low-level sounds, very soft sounds, and certain sounds can cause that.
I'm going to ask you about another potential sensory effect. And I tell me whether it could fit into this or not. If you look at a piece of art and you have a visceral reaction to a piece of art, is it possible that that's what we're talking about here also?
From the visual side. That would fall into a category called visual synesthesia.
Oh, okay.
And there's audio. Again, I'll get probably way too deep into this, but what audio synesthesia is when you hear a particular sound or vice versa, see a particular color, you hear a particular tone. So I knew of a person back in the symphony in Omaha, Nebraska, one of the well-known ones in the world, Omaha, Nebraska Symphony.
Never heard of it, but go ahead.
there was a, I forget the instrument this person played, but she had audio synesthesia. And when she saw certain colors, she heard certain notes, or vice versa. When she heard certain notes, she saw certain colors. And that's how she said playing music for her was like Alice in Wonderland, because she had audio, visual, auditory synesthesia.
So did she enjoy the experience or was it painful for her?
No, she enjoyed it very much.
Okay. So she would be like playing music all day, all night.
Yeah. And the other thing with synesthesia, you can have synesthesia in a number of different ways. Like I have read of a person that has synesthesia that when he sees certain shapes, he hears certain sounds. It's literally like, there's a little bit of, like on your vet when you're putting that, your dashboard back in there.
Yeah.
If you get things just a little tiny too close or a little tiny misfired, things are going to light up that shouldn't.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then they'll start smoking. And pretty soon they'll be sparking, and then they won't be there anymore because the whole thing will have melted. A friend of mine and I actually melted his Corvette one time.
Oh, that's, I hate when that happens.
Well, he didn't mind too much because he had it fully insured, and he wound up with a brand new one after that. But that's a story for another time about how almost single-handedly I helped a guy melt his Corvette to a puddle of goo on the ground.
Oh, man.
But anyway, you might have heard me pounding on my desk when you started describing what this
ASMR or synesthesia in general.
I wanted to pronounce it in its multisyllabic glory, autonomous sensory meridian response.
Yes.
But you started describing that, and apparently I'm wrong. But here's what happened to me. I was watching a brand new television show, and a question, it was a quiz show, and this question came up. And the question was, some people have a reaction when they view art, and that reaction is called, and there were four choices. Now, you may have heard of this show because of the four choices, there were some helpful hints. You could knock off two of the choices. They called that 50-50. You could call a friend of yours. That was like dial a friend. And you could do something else that would help reduce or increase your chances of answering it correctly. Now, during this show, I played along on the computer every day, or every time it was on, every week, I guess, because they gave away magnificent prizes. And this will date the period, but the prizes I won, and I had a whole closet full of them, were hats, which I never wore, and mouse pads. And mouse pads are pretty much a thing of the past, as far as I can tell. But I had excellent success, and there was one time when I answered every single question that was presented on that episode of the show. And had I been sitting with the host, who was Regis Philbin at that time, I would have won a cool $1 million. But it wasn't to be. I was sitting at home in my on my computer, just answering questions. As soon as Regis asked the question, I'd click on the correct answer, and I had every one of them right. So, but this was an answer that eluded me. The visceral sensation somebody feels when they view a piece of art. And I believe that if not the autonomous sensory meridian response, then the other thing you said, one of those two things was probably addressed on that episode. And I think it was the very first episode of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Ah, okay.
Probably 20 years ago.
So, you know, the next time you're in, you know, like a pub, you know, out there in St. Charles.
It's been a while.
Or wherever you're going.
Yep.
If you're in a pub, you could win massive amounts of beer by asking what synesthesia is.
I could do that. Now, there's a sizable contingent of people that will say, I don't care. I'm not giving you any beer because I don't even know you.
I don't care because I'm not going to buy you a beer no matter what.
Well, my wife has a friend whose father was a union recruiter, and he used to travel around the pubs of the inner city Chicago and the south side and southwest side with a device by which he would gain people's trust and confidence. He would recruit them to join his union. I forget what union it was. And he would also entertain them and win many side drinks. I think the guy always drank for free. This device he would leave in the car, go in, and he would set the stage. During a couple of drinks, he'd talk to people. They'd go, yeah. You know, you're not one of our crowd. You're in our neighborhood bar. I don't know who you are or anything. He would wind up going out to his car, bringing the device into the car, the bar, taking bets, showing people, getting them together very closely around, and then scaring the absolute snot out of them. And what it was a cage that had a mongoose in it. And a mongoose, as you know, if you listen to the story, is the most ferocious small critter there is. It eats deadly snakes. It eats cobras. You know, it gets into fights with cobras and Indian, kills them all. And I've got one in this cage right here. The cage had some, like a screen porch on it, and then a little door. And so you get everybody's faces right up close to the thing, and the top was spring-loaded. And when he hit the secret button, that top would open with a big bang and scare the crap out of everybody that gathered around him. Somehow he parlayed that into a career, a daily activity. So
the mongoose pop-up.
Yeah, yeah. And
what were this thing, music box, you know, you crank a music box?
Yeah, Jack in the Box.
Jack in the Box, yeah.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to hear that in my head all day long, Doug.
Well, this one didn't play music, didn't have a crank, but it did have a little secret button so that when your face was over there looking in the door, where's that mongoose? Come on, maybe we can lure him out. And then the top of the cage, oh, attached to the top, when the top sprang open, it not only would it hit with a bang, it also had like a raccoon tail attached to it. So it looked like the mongoose was escaping and was going to kill everyone in the bar. And when that was sprung on me early in my relationship with this woman that I later took as my betrothed, I found myself standing on the back of the sofa in that room. I don't know how I got there. Very much like I described my mother jumping to the top of the stove when she saw a mouse. I went from the floor where the mongoose cage was to standing on the sofa, holding my hands against the ceiling so I wouldn't fall off it. And, you know, that's just one of these mysteries of life, how that happened.
And this was the first time you saw the mongoose trick?
Yes, yes. After that, I was an avid proponent of let's scare everybody else.
So what was this gentleman's name, if I might ask?
His name was Ambrose Maher, but he wasn't home. The trick was shown to me by his daughter, who was my wife's best friend, probably still is her best friend. And she and her boyfriend and I and my wife and probably the other kids in the family gathered around. This was in the 60s, probably 1968 or thereabouts. But I met Ambrose for the first time when I came over to his daughter's house. We were going to pick her up, and we all came inside. And I went over, and I said, "Hello, Mr. Maher. It's nice to meet you." And I stuck out my hand. And he said the one word, he's dead now, but the one word he ever said to me, only one word the whole time I knew him from 1967 until his death, "Move." Apparently, while trying to be polite and offering to shake hands, I had stepped between him and the television.
Oh.
And they didn't have it marked on the floor, you know, like forbidden zone or
anything. Yeah, the forbidden zone. Don't get any closer than this.
Yep.
To Ambrose. It's dangerous. He can That's reach right. you from here.
That's right. So basically it was move. That's all I've ever heard from him.
And this was the individual that built an entire career on a mongoose box.
Absolutely. And apparently he told the story better than it was told to me. It was a constant source of entertainment and probably union recruiting success for him. I wish I knew what kind of union he was involved in. I don't think even his kids knew. And his kids are still friends of mine. I mean, in spite of the fact that he wasn't a very attentive parent, the kids grew up to be all upstanding citizens. So we've dealt with ASMR and then mongoose cages.
We have to get to the mailbag.
We promised a mailbag marathon.
We did. So we've got a little bit of time left. Let's for sure throw in a couple mailbaggers. We are going to need on the next time around to go for mailbag marathon part two.
Yeah, this is going to be disappointing if we can't do a few mailbag marathons to add them all up to one big marathon. Okay, I'm still trying to clean house from the bottom of the mailbag from the last year's 2019 collection of mail. And I'm up to mail that came in September of 2019. So some of it's a little out of date, but here is a person who is Kirb, first name K-I-R-B, I think that's a nickname. Last name, Walters. And he says, "Doug, I am 65 as of August 17th of 2019 and have enrolled in Medicare Part A as of August 1st. I'm currently enrolled in the VA's healthcare system and receive my medical services and any drugs prescribed to me through the VA as a Category 8 patient." And that's a low priority group. "I do pay co-pays to the VA for my services and drugs that are affordable. I'm happy with the situation and plan on staying in the system as long as I can. I understand I still need Part B supplement, and I also understand that I don't need a Part D supplement. I think he's got his terminology a little confused. I don't need a Part D supplement as I receive any drugs needed through the VA. My health condition is currently good. I have purchased and read your Medicare for the Lazy Man 2019 book and am considering purchasing the high deductible Plan F. Should I select this plan, will I be penalized or rated unfavorably in later years if I decide to change my coverage to the more comprehensive Plan F and possibly want to add Part D coverage? These thoughts are based on something changing in my current VA coverage. Of course, my current thoughts are to minimize my Medicare costs while still in the VA system, and which I plan on staying in as long as possible. Should I need to go outside the VA system, can you give me some examples of what I might expect in copay costs with the high deductible Plan F? The VA information I have received has me understanding that the VA and Medicare coverage systems do not overlap, and they are independent of each other as far as Medicare costs, medical costs. I plan on staying employed until at least age 70 to maximize my Social Security. Currently, I'm a self-employed realtor, but may make a change to something else in the next year or two. Sorry about writing this book, but I am somewhat concerned about my current decisions and how they might affect my situation down the road. Enjoyed your book and will tell others about it. Thank you. Signed, Curb Walters. And I said, hello, Mr. Walters. Thanks very much for writing. I am glad you enjoyed Medicare for the Lazy Man and hope you will go back to Amazon to write a short customer review. That would not only help me, but future readers as well. Normally, I hit them with that at the end of my response. This time, I did it at the beginning. A little change up there. I like to keep them guessing. Your goal of minimizing your Medicare costs will be well served by purchasing high deductible Plan F and using the VA for your drug needs. As long as the government considers the VA coverage to be creditable, you will not face a late enrollment penalty if or when you eventually purchase a Part D plan. Even future changes in your VA coverage could trigger a no penalty right to purchase your standalone plan at that time. More about high deductible Plan F. A simple mathematical analysis would indicate that your share of the cost of outpatient medical treatment would be about 20% of the first 10,000 of these costs. The trade-off for this is obviously a much reduced monthly premium. The experience my wife and I have had is that the bills we are asked to pay are minuscule in comparison to the total cost of a particular service. We would not even consider paying a higher premium, but then again, we are not seeking a security blanket, just a reasonable risk versus reward. Selecting high deductible Plan F now will not cause you to be penalized or rated unfavorably in the unlikely event you want to go to a richer plan in the future. Depending on your state of residence, there may be other impediments to a change in plans, like questions about your medical history. Overall, if your experience is like mine, the thought of moving to a different plan will not even occur to you after enjoying the benefits of high deductible Plan F. Please let me know if I can render any further opinions or advice, and don't forget about that Amazon customer review. Came back around and smacked him with it right at the end. God, I'm a sneaky. How are we doing time-wise, Randy?
We are running short.
Oh, boy. It doesn't seem like we chewed up that much time at the beginning, but I guess we did, huh?
It's interesting. We, on rare occasion, when we first started this podcasting, 20 minutes sounded like forever.
Yeah.
Now we're beginning to think 20 minutes is just not enough.
Well, if we ever get any paid sponsorship, we're going to have to bump it up to 25 because we'll have to make room for the sponsors. We're not going to cut back on our goofing around time, are we?
No, that's half the fun.
Yeah, there you go. That's the only reason we show up here all the time.
I know. On rare occasion, I even have to wake you up and drag you into the studio.
But once I realize what's happening, then being dragged into the studio is not an unpleasant experience because I have fun telling, swapping stories with you. So that's going to be good. Now, I'm going to be sitting in a car for the next week, looking out the window, thinking of new subjects, hopefully, to add to our future episodes. But in the meantime, I want to encourage everybody to go to Amazon.com. Basically, what we've got here is a plea from me to the audience to go out to Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com and buy my book, Medicare for the Lazy Man 2020. You can get it in audio form, you can get it in paperback form, or you can get it in Kindle or ebook form. And then if you would, write a short little review after you finish it, telling the world what you thought of it. That would be a beautiful thing. Or go to our website. Randy and his crack staff created a magnificent Medicare website. It's the only Medicare website I've ever heard of where you can watch a drag race between two 1957 Chevy Gassers. And I'm not going to tell you which one wins, because they're both 57 Chevys, but it's a beautiful thing to some of us old school types. So that is MedicareForTheLazyMan.com. There's all kinds of Medicare info there. And what else do we want them to do? We want them to subscribe and follow.
We want them to buy your book. We want them to subscribe. We want them to follow. We want them to tell their friends about it. You know, all this kind of stuff. But I do have one more item.
Oh, boy.
Given the fact that you mentioned you're going to be on the road for a bit.
Yes.
We might want to, you know, check in with you remotely so you can give us a little bit of local color about, you know, Medicare for the Lazy Man on the road.
As things appear to be in other geographic locations, huh?
Yes, yes.
We're talking to some lazy people here. Well, I don't mind checking in at all. I hope it doesn't detract from our mission of bringing Medicare knowledge to people.
I think it will be perfectly fine. You can do the recordings remotely. We can figure out a way to do it. Given the fact we're not doing any video, you know, we won't have to mess with that. But I think people would enjoy some, you know, Johnny on the spot information from your various locations.
Well, I can certainly do that. All I need is a phone number to call. And then I will be scrounging for content with which to entertain our audience.
So I think we can do a little bit of that.
Okay.
You know, really, we don't need to do a lot of it, but I just thought it would be fun because someday you may be on the road more than you are now after you get out of your lockdown in Cave Creek.
I don't feel locked down here. I just feel lazy.
Oh.
You know, they always say, write what you know. Well, I know lazy. That's why I wrote Medicare.
There you go. Absolutely. Well, everybody, thank you so much for joining us. We have a blast talking to you. We have a blast visiting with you. And we're looking forward to it, as always, next time. In the meantime, as Doug says, buy the book, buy the audio, buy anything we've got, because it's all good information. And everyone that we know of has always said that this really cuts it down to the brass tacks in terms of what you need to know, and it eliminates the fear factor entirely. So having said that, you have just spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy with MedicareForTheLazyMan.com.
Bye-bye.